Hi, this is Richard Edelman, and you're listening to The Trust Makers. I'm Richard Edelman, and I'm with Scott Galloway, longtime pal. He's a professor at NYU and a tech entrepreneur, and we're here to talk about brands and politics. And we're sitting here at Cannes at the Festival of Creativity. Mm-hmm. Welcome, Scott.
Good to see you, Richard.
Thank you. So, brands and politics, let's get right to it. We're in a time in the world where there are 50 elections. The U.S. big debate is next week. We have the U.K. election the week following. And the big news from the Edelman Trust Barometer is that politics is a major part of brand choice.
Yeah.
Does this stun you?
I'm not sure it stuns me. It depresses me, kind of the politicization of everything, where all of a sudden, like, even stock exchanges now are being politicized. So this new Texas stock exchange they're talking about, the opening, if you will, the opportunity is that they have depositioned, if you will, the NYSE and the NASDAQ as New York in blue, which means there's opportunity for red. It just feels like everyone has to choose a side. You know, there's sort of the politicization and the financialization of just everything. Everything is about money and politics, and it's forcing us into us and them. And I think it just leads to the divisiveness and the polarization. So, surprised, not really. It's happened slowly but surely. Disappointed, yeah.
The thing that really got me a week ago was when Caitlin Clark was left off of the U.S. women's Olympic basketball team,
yeah.
And all of a sudden that was weaponized by the right on the basis that, oh, of course, she's a white girl, and that's why she wasn't selected. She's
yeah.
a kid. She's just come out of the University of Iowa. She's exceptional. But
yeah.
she was the first one to say, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, even remember, I forget about the bridge in, was it in Baltimore, the bridge that collapsed?
Yeah.
Or with the, immediately it was, well, that's because of DEI.
And he's a DEI mayor.
Yeah, and you would have never thought of putting a layer of politics on some of the things it's been layered on. Everybody sees now opportunity to try and embarrass the other side as opposed to move to solutions. There used to be sort of at some point we put our politics aside and move to action. And now there's total inaction and it's just all about politics. I think it's really unproductive.
Two or three stats from our trust barometer stand out to me. One, that 80% of respondents across 15 countries believe that brands are acting in a political way,
yeah.
which means they're picking social channels or they're picking influencers,
yeah.
for example, and that's inherently political.
Yeah.
That nearly two-thirds of them are making decisions about brands in part based on the politics because
yeah.
ideology has somehow become identity. And the third stat that amazed me was 80% say, I will not buy brands from a specific country. So nationalism has really entered the fray.
To be clear, I think a lot of companies and brands walked into it. I think if a company is really committed to a cause and its employees and its stakeholders are committed to it, fine. You know, I feel like brands who embrace the left are virtue signaling and want to take the moral high ground. And brands on the right want to show some sort of leadership and no-nonsense kind of like courage. And the reality is they're not doing either of those things. Personally, I think companies should just come out and say, we're here to make money and we're here to provide economic security for our shareholders and our employees. And so I think a lot of brands and companies kind of walked into this mess. And especially in tech, I think a lot of CEOs pretended they cared what their employees think and gave very inspiring speeches about usually very, you know, somewhat woke, I hate to use the term, progressive policies, but they weren't really walking the walk. So when I sit on boards of companies, I'm mostly like, why are we even wading into these waters? That's not why people come to us. They come to us to buy, you know, a great outfit. We're Urban Outfitters, right? They come to us to buy software. We don't need to take a political stand. And if you take a political stand, regardless of where you work, you're going to alienate somewhere between 10 and 51% of your employee base. And they're going to feel pressure to sign up for that political stand because the CEOs and the people who have a disproportionate impact on my future have stated that they feel a certain way. So I think we need to go back to a point where corporations become a safe space from politics, if possible, and also recognize they play a key part in the economy. They're so good at making money, they should be trusted to do nothing else.
So, Scott, in our data, it actually says that 70% of consumers want brands to stand up and speak up 5-to-1 more on sustainability, 4-to-1 on fair pay, and 2-to-1 on race.
Yeah.
And the reason is they see brands as somehow more able than government, and that, you know, brands give them optimism and brands give them somehow a direction. And,
yeah,
you know, it is a function of the void in society, that low trust in government.
I think that makes sense, but I'll say why I don't think it's a good idea. The politicization of everything, they want to see everything through a political lens or a social lens. This is the least productive legislative Congress in history. So people want, you know, are looking to the private sector, but it's an idolatry of innovators in the private sector that I think misleads people into thinking that companies can change social policy. And I don't care, and I know this sounds cynical, how many iPods they paint red or how many black squares on Black Lives Matter they put out on Instagram. I find that for the most part, generally speaking, almost every organization I've ever worked with that's a for-profit will do whatever moves the share price up. And I think they just need to be more transparent about this. And if they feel strongly about the issues you bring up, then I think they need to act up, not speak up. Because what I find is a lot of them are speaking, but the music doesn't match the words. And they think of it as branding. And it's like, well, okay, that's fine. But you're setting yourself up for failure when you spend more money talking about DEI in your commercials than actually figuring out how many people on your board are non-white. So I find that where a lot of it is noise that doesn't match the signal. And while I think consumers might say they want an organization and they want to feel good about spending their money on an organization that reflects their values, I just think it's dangerous waters. I think over the medium and the long term, a company sets themselves up for a lot of criticism and alienating a certain part of the economy. And also, Richard, at the end of the day, I think consumers, there's some dissonance where they say one thing, and at the end of the day, they buy the best product at the lowest price.
So, Scott, do you think there's enough ideological diversity in marketing teams? It's one of the things that I am now committed to doing at Edelman. I want to have more people who have a conservative bent, because in a world where a lot of people don't trust government or they don't trust authority figures, they don't trust experts, they don't trust science, we have to have those voices in the room.
Yeah, look, Richard, I'm a proud progressive, but I try not to bring my viewpoint into the office place. I'm struggling with this right now. I'm very outspoken around Israel. And I have a small company now, Prop G Media. It's 14 people. The average age is 26. They do not share my views. A lot of them do not share my views on Israel. And so I'm struggling with, to what extent is it fair of me to bring my views into the workplace because we're a media company, while understanding that some of the people who work with me don't feel the same way I do. Now, back to diversity. I have never heard of anyone being fired for being too woke. I've heard of them for being fired for saying they don't believe in a woman's right to choice. I've heard of them being fired for saying, I don't believe there's any evidence that DEI adds any shareholder value. People start saying, I don't feel safe around you. So yeah, it's gone way too far. When I speak at the biggest corporations in the world, and inevitably a young person will stand up and say, what is our role in promoting a sustainable future or the destruction of the environment? And there's people in the audience that probably say, this has gone way overboard. That is not what we should be doing. They cannot speak up. The person promoting really far left woke ideology never gets fired. Now, I would argue in the back of the mind is sometimes of their manager, they're like, you know, they nod and say you're a leader and they think, OK, I'm not sure this person is here to just sell more soap. But we absolutely need more political diversity. The issue I would have, the question I would have is, should we have it at all in a for-profit organization? Is the CEO there to create a platform where people can develop economic security for them and their families, be good citizens, pay people well, provide health insurance, make sure you comply with laws that don't discriminate against anyone based on race, sexual orientation? But I do believe that the politicization has creeped into companies. And again, no CEO has ever been asked to step down for being too woke.
So, Scott, if you look at the context of the Edelman Trust Barometer for 25 years, the three or four big trends are the divide in opinion between the top 25 and bottom 25% of the population, the mass class divide.
Yep.
The second is the incredible rise of business and decline of government. So it's like a seesaw in a playground, which the one 100%. End is very high. The third is the battle for truth, which is really tough. And then the last one is the fear of the pace of innovation.
Yeah.
Because people are afraid of losing their jobs. Yeah. They don't understand AI, whatever it is. In your mind, what is the role of brands in any of this? I'm sure you remember the Mean Joe Green ad and all this when you were a kid. Joe Green gets the Coke from the kid. And all this other. And, you know, this was at a tough time in America, let's be frank, right? Vietnam was just over and all of us were like, oh God, what's going to happen now? And so brands do have this role of optimism and hope.
Yeah, look, I see brands as they want to inject emotion into an inanimate object such that you have some sort of self-expressive benefit, or it helps you, it shorthands due diligence on the product such that you can charge above market margin. But I think it's shareholder driven. And I think you're taking risks when you start injecting anything political into the brand, because you're setting yourself up to, for one, warranted scrutiny, and that is, are you walking the walk? Are you really doing this? Mm-hmm. And two, does this viewpoint represent your stakeholders? And is it your job to speak on behalf of your shareholders and your employees? Is this what they asked you to do? Now, it works the other way, too. I was really disappointed that Bud Light got so much grief for having a trans woman as one of their influencers. I mean, it's virtue signaling on the left, but it's also, bottom line, on the right, it's just gotten mean. It's like, okay, this is an inspiring young woman. Small video. Why do you feel the need to go after this individual? I think AB InBev, which I think is a great company, I've done some work with them, I think they missed an opportunity to just say, she's a wonderful young woman, she's an influencer, we stand behind her and what she did, and then not bring it up again. They weren't talking about trans rights. They were talking about someone who has a following that they appreciate and they admire. So while the far left, I think, has tried to seize the moral high ground, and that's dangerous waters, the far right seems to weigh into these companies, and it just feels mean when they go after these companies for what they're doing. It's like, come on, do you really need... It's one thing to say to a company, you shouldn't be in this business. It's another thing to start going after people and making special interest groups, you know, attacking them and feel bad about them. So I just go back to, why are we letting politics at all and social policy inject into organizations? And the dangerous thing about it is this notion that brands and business can solve these problems because we trust them more than government is incredibly dangerous. Because at the end of the day, the government, they're elected by us. Right. They have the ability to do stuff. They're supposed to get these things done. And if you're waiting for the better angels of CEOs to show up and change the world for the positive, don't hold your breath. That's not what they're there for.
But Scott, here's the thing. I think in the case that you mentioned, it was a symbol. It was a moment. It was a opportunity to make a point,
agreed,
which is you've betrayed the core customer. You know, we feel let down. And I do believe the yellow lines for brands have narrowed. And that one way or another, we've got to defend the core market and then try to have incrementals around. But I do want to talk to you about this nationalism issue.
Yeah.
Do you think that brands that are multinational now really have to worry about the rise of national brands? I mean, in our data, 75% of those in Saudi and the UAE and Indonesia say, I'm much more buying local brands as a statement of who I am.
Yeah. One of the benefits of a brand is self-expressive benefit. I'm wearing a Panerai because I think it's Italian masculinity, but it's rooted in nationalism. And sometimes that can be a feature. I think people wanting to buy domestic brands, I don't know, I understand that. And also, we benefit in America. American tech has a halo of positive, you know, French wine and cheese, Japanese cars. These national brands are really, really powerful. I think any sort of nationalism is a bit dangerous, but I remember picking up a woman for a date in high school and her father, a Vietnam vet, saying, you know, I don't let my daughter drive in Japanese cars. I mean, this, granted, I'm dating myself. This is, you know, this is actually early 80s. I'm not that old. And I thought, that just seems strange and outdated. But it's weird that we're circling back to that. In most cases, it's positive, right? In most cases, national identity, you know, Canadian maple syrup, whatever it is, American media, you know, these national brands serve as good halos. But nationalism as a whole, it's not being used, unfortunately, for national pride or to identify the quality of a product. It's being used, again, to further divide us and wedge us. I'm just disappointed, and it all comes back to me, for me, Richard, to mostly online discourse. And that is, the algorithms have figured out that it used to be that sex sells, now it's rage that sells. And so people are now spending more and more of their time in a medium where the algorithms have figured out if they can find a wedge issue to pit you against me, it'll keep us engaged and they can sell more Nissan ads.
And politics engenders
ultimate
rage.
A wedge issue.
Again, a stat from the study. 60% of Gen Z believe if you say nothing that you're complicit, that you somehow are in agreement with whatever the allegation is about your company or your brand or whatever. It is a big risk to just let the storm pass. So I think brands have to walk into this world and say, okay, we understand there are red states and blue states, or that there's China versus US or whatever, and make themselves multi-local and show somehow that they are part of, you know, they have local influencers, or they have local, you know, donation to community or something, local jobs.
Again, Richard, I would argue that, again, I'll use the term consumer dissonance, where people say one thing and act another. I think at the end of the day, people will buy the best product at the lowest price. Mm. And they'll talk a lot about made in America and being pro-union and making, you know, having buying dolphin-safe tuna. I think that those issues are overstated in terms of actual consumer behavior. I think if a company is accused of something, they have a responsibility to respond. But my advice on when I've been on seven public company boards now, unless there's some veracity to the accusation, that we, for the most part, should just stay out of it. And I think companies, a lot of times companies weighing into social issues, I think it's narcissism. Mm-hmm. I think it's the CEO deciding that they are an unelected political leader. Mm-hmm. And my sense is, and I have a very sort of capitalist Darwinian mentality, you're here to take in inputs, add value, produce more inputs, and create economic value for you and your shareholders. And I think a lot of this is ego kind of gone crazy, that no one asked you to issue your viewpoint on this. If people recognize that, okay, you're Nike and 40% of your customer base and 60% of your revenue comes from non-whites, and you don't have any non-whites on your board of directors, that is a fair accusation and they should respond to it with action. Great. A commercial with Colin Kaepernick, smart thing to do, social policy. They did the math. 2/3 of their consumer base is people under the age of 30. Nobody under the age of 30 thinks America is getting race relations correct. So the people who went out and burned their Nikes, that was probably their first pair of Nikes. It was a smart move financially, but also, okay, how diverse is your board? So I just think I'm always about, rather than signaling or branding, how do we want to behave? And word gets out now. There's so many methods of weapons of mass diligence, whether it's Glassdoor, you know, or employees going on background. If you're doing the right thing, word will get out. But I would question some of that data, Richard. I actually think some of it is in itself a little bit misleading because I don't see that consumers are behaving that way with their pocketbooks.
Listen, again, this is the I say this, I do this.
Yeah.
It's fair. So where are you about purpose and about ESG? Are these phrasing issues or are these reality issues? Do you think brands do well with purpose or do you think that companies do well with ESG or you're nervous?
I think it's mostly bullshit. I think your job as a private company is to create shareholder value and economic value for your shareholders and your employees. You should be a good citizen. That's just good business. But as Apple is virtue signaling, they're locating in Ireland so they can engage in tax avoidance. I think we're wading into dangerous waters there. And the thing I really don't like about this is I think it's damaging because people are under the impression that corporations are going to cool the planet, that corporations are going to promote the interests of special interest groups and people who have faced economic adversity or have been discriminated against. And I don't think that's true. I think we need laws passed. I think we need funding for transition to renewables. I think this is government's job. And private companies, their job is to create economic value. We have laws that are good laws protecting people against discrimination or unfair employment practice or unfair workplaces. But to think that we shouldn't have Ford would still be pouring mercury into the river. Because if they didn't, it would put them at a cost advantage to General Motors and Chrysler. So we pass laws and we have an EPA. But generally speaking, I think this notion that we're expecting companies to fill this void is just really dumb. I think at the end of the day, they'll tell you what you want to hear such that you buy more of their beer or their widget or their podcast microphone, and they're going to be totally focused on their actions in terms of getting more shareholder value such that the CEO and his team can buy a second house in the Hamptons. And I know that's cynical, and it plays out every goddamn day. And because consumers believe that corporations can step into this void, we don't hold our elected leaders accountable to actually pass laws that enforce these noble ideas.
Politics is clearly a new factor in the equation. We can't change this. This is a reality. People are looking at things through their ideology, and it's become their identity. And so if you're a brand, do you say, okay, this is part of my analysis? You know, I understand that explicitly I'm going to try and be a Red State brand or a Blue State brand, or I can do something that goes between. For example, the Modelo campaign that, you know, credits people for doing a good day's hard work and says, bravo, you know, and has a bunch of Latinos who are having a brew. To me, that's great. You know, that's
I don't
easy.
See that as political, though. I think hard work and embracing Latin culture for a Latin brand, I just see that as good business and understanding your market. I don't see that as political. I mean, more and more of the Latin community is identifying as Republican now. I mean, it's still overwhelmingly Democratic. Mm-hmm. And much to my disappointment, more and more are identifying as Republicans. I think the notion of hard work, having a beer at the end of the day,
freedom,
celebrating an amazing culture, I'd like to think those issues haven't been politicized. Maybe they have. But if they started saying, you know, having images of a wall being built or not being built and weighing into that, right, saying, if they've decided Latino culture is being demonized in the U.S. and they started taking a political stand, I'd be like, that's just stupid. You're weighing into waters that no one's asked you to, and it's going to backfire on you.
Yeah, we should show people a mirror of optimism and where we can come together.
American values.
And American values or, you know, Chinese values or Indonesian values,
whatever it might be. Yeah,
100%. Wherever we are. So, Scott, let's just agree that brands have a new landscape, but they have to be conscious that they're in the minefield as opposed to trying 100%. To run out of it and to figure out a way to get through it.
Look, there's a reason, Richard, why your business has grown faster than inflation and communications. People with the term communications is one of the fastest growing sectors in all of the economy. And it's because your communications and how you frame issues are not only incredibly important to your brands and your ability to attract employees and investors, but it's increasingly important. Storytelling or framing of the message has kind of become the core competence of companies that get their stock price up, get access to cheap capital, and then use that cheap capital to pull away from the competition. At the end of the day, Amazon is not a story about supply chain. Well, maybe it is supply chain, but it's also very much a story about storytelling. And that is when Jeff Bezos wrote that 1997 letter, which I assume he had real talented help on, everyone just wanted to buy stock. It was simple, yet visionary. So everyone wanted to buy stock, even though the company was trading at an outrageous multiple, which gave him the ability to go out and build a massive infrastructure around supply chain and then just pull away from it. So if there's one competence you could want to have your kids to have, always, it's storytelling. And if there's one thing you'd want, and this is a pitch for Edelman now, but if there's one place you want to spend money, it's to craft a better narrative. Because oftentimes when you look at the company that's trading at a PE of 15 times EBITDA versus 11 times, the underlying businesses aren't that different. It's how they frame their message to the outside world.
But you also had one really important message that I'll end on, which is trust drives growth and action earns trust. That action is the thing that companies must make happen. It just to talk is all hat and no cattle, to use a Texan phrase.
Just assume you're going to have Wonder Woman's golden lasso on you all the time. And eventually the truth is going to come out. And how much of this is jazz hands and misdirects? It's a very simple question around your messaging. Does the music match the words?
When price and quality are followed by trust as the third most important reason why people buy brands, it tells you everything.
I think that's right. You know, do you deliver on what you say you're going to do? Are you a company that thinks thoughtfully about trying to be a good citizen, that you treat your employees well, that you don't cut corners, that your leadership is good people trying to do the right thing? I think all of that stuff bubbles up. But I think the notion that you're going to find an agency that's going to give people the impression that you are that way and your actions don't match that.
But it's also fascinating in the communications world that you now have JWT, YNR, Gray, Wonderman, they're all on the scrap heap. And the ones that are growing are Edelman or Droga and people who are actually, in a different way, expressing the message, which is to do with action.
The conglomerate model around we'll give you good, not great across everything and just try and hold on to the client. I mean, it's kind of hilarious where we are at I call it the We're Still Relevant Conference. Meanwhile, the companies taking over and their beaches get bigger every year invite all of these agencies to their party as they slowly shoot them in the face. I just find the whole thing very ironic. And the thing I love about NVIDIA, they're not even here because they don't want to even pretend that they're being supportive of the media industry, because the reality is they're probably going to put a third of media planners out of business in the next 10 years. So they're not even trying to lie to these people and throw parties for them. But the organizations you're talking about are smaller, more nimble. The growth in shareholder value, which I think CEOs and boards are 99% focused on, is increasingly about great messaging.
It's true. But it's also about doing something.
100%.
So thanks for being on Trustmakers, and you and I will stay friends for another 30 years.
I'd like that, and congrats on your success, Richard.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you for tuning into the Trustmakers, an Edelman podcast in partnership with Advertising Week, where we speak with leaders and other trust builders across institutions. See you next time.